This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. It is time now for our fan show Monday, and we are straight into the boys from Brentford. Yes, last Saturday was the final West London derby at Griffin Park in the league. Of course, they might meet each other in the FA Cup. Who knows? And Brentford's were, of course, the ones to leave smiling, running out 3-1 winners to record their fifth straight victory against QPR at Griffin Park. We're going to be hearing what Brentford and QPR fans had to say about that game. Plus, we'll be hearing from Brentford coach Thomas Frank too. Big day for him, of course, and the club. With season tickets also going on sale for Brentford's new stadium last week, we'll be discussing the buzz around Brentford's move to their new stadium in January. And will the club achieve their 10,000 season ticket objective? Like I said, it's the Brentford fan show here with the boys from Besotted. Billy the B Grant.
Hello.
Hello. Edward the Headwood. Hello.
How's it going?
Very good, thank you. This is the first time, I believe, we've been on the show together,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, first time we've been together. I've had a bit of a hiatus, if I'm honest. And I was sitting with Robin the other day and I went, do you know what? I haven't been back. I need to go back. I need to come back on the radio and put my voice across for the Besotted side as well.
Great to have you back. And I guess I'm back in a sense too.
Absolutely. Head was back.
Back again.
Tell a friend.
Do you know, in my head, I thought I might start the show with that and say Beadle's back, but I thought no, because no. I'll fall on my backside and it'll be horrendous radio.
It should be Beadle's about, to be fair.
Should be, shouldn't it? Yeah, we should get that jingle going. Gents, you were together before the show with your usual chat before you come on air.
The production meeting at the White Hart, or just around the corner, White Hart Pub, Wicked Pub. If you ever in the area, just go down there, check them out, and you can get the chicken tagine thingy that I had today, which I saw your eyes.
It looked incredible.
They were. What were we discussing, Edward?
We're discussing loads. We started off mainly kicking off with the main news today about Thomas Frank. And the exciting new news. The big new contract for till 2023.
Wow. So, Thomas Frank has signed a new contract with Brentford, which is it's funny because all of a sudden, like, Brentford are loving it at the moment now. They're like pinging, you know, anytime there's either a new person signing, but mainly it's the re-signs. The re-signs are more than the signings at the moment now, because we haven't gone mad on the signing. We went mad in the summer, but we haven't got mad on the signing. So what they're now doing is they're pinging the re-sign. So like the Benrahma re-sign, the Ollie Watkins re-sign, and they said, bing, there's another one. And it wasn't a Benrahma re-sign.
He changed his number, didn't he?
I was getting ahead of myself there. Maybe tomorrow. But the Thomas Frank, this is the interesting one there, because when they pinged it up today, and remember, it all went round with us lot, we were thinking, who's it going to be?
Yep.
Are we bringing someone else in? Really, the hope was there, you know, that it was going to be Benrahma. And we weren't deflated.
Not at all.
When we saw it as Thomas Frank, did we?
No, not at all. I sat there at my desk at work and went, oh, excellent news. I think it's a really good thing. And the first question, and what Billy and I have just been talking about, the main thing in my head is it almost like a player transfer, new contract? So you sign up Ollie Watkins on a 4-year deal, and now you've signed Thomas Frank on a 3-year deal. So if hypothetically someone came and tried to cherry pick him, let's say, to another bigger club in the Premier League, maybe, if we're not there, and does that act in a way that will get us more transfer fees for Thomas Frank? I can't remember the last time we signed up a manager on such a long deal.
No, I mean, we were talking about that. I mean, Dean Smith, we love Dean Smith, he was great, but I'm sure Dean wasn't on a 3-year deal as such. I think he was on a couple of years. Mark Warburton was on a 1-year rolling deal as well, so it's 1 year and it just kept on rolling on. So if he was ever let go, then we had to pay him off on a year, but from what I can gather. But with Thomas Frank, I mean, I think this is quite an interesting point, because I think it probably shows how important the club thinks Thomas Frank is to where we're going. Thomas Frank was brought in, as a lot of people may may or may not know if they're listening, but he was brought in as an assistant to Dean Smith. I think it's probably best to describe that Thomas Frank had different capabilities. Dean's a great man manager, and he coached the team well, and people really loved him. And I think Thomas brought an added sort of kind of tactical value to the Brentford coaching team. So, you know, Dean Smith, to be fair, and like I said, I love Dean Smith, because Dean Smith, not unlike other head coaches or managers that are there before, when you suggested things to actually make the team and the club better, they turn around and say, no, I'm not having that. Dean Smith said, look, I'll be fine with that. So he brought Thomas Frank in, whereas even though if you think about it, Thomas Frank might have been not a little bit of a threat, but he's somebody who was like head coach of Bromby. He'd been playing in the Europa League. All of a sudden, he's his assistant. He must be thinking, he's going to try and steal a job. But Dean Smith was cool with it. He did his own thing, and he realised that Thomas Frank was actually adding to what he was doing. He was using his tactical nous, and it's well known now that, you know, Dean Smith did what he's done. Thomas Frank added a tactical nous to it, and when Dean Smith left, Thomas Frank took over. A lot of people, which is interesting, you know, again, is Thomas Frank came for a lot of grief. The first 10, 11 games, he won hardly not, didn't win any. I don't think he must have won one.
One in 10, was it?
One in 10, I think he won. And he got massive grief. Everyone's saying Thomas Frank out. It was a baptism of fire for him. But the club believed in him. He believed in himself. And they knew what he wanted to do. And eventually, boom, he came out the back end, started playing some great football. Early this season again, I mean, you looked at the stats. He didn't have great stats at the beginning of the season, did he? But we had bought in 11 players. What were the stats again? How many, roughly?
I don't think we counted. There weren't very many wins in the first, let's say, 10 games.
We lost
it wasn't until Birmingham, the first 30-yard header on the first game of the season.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think it wasn't until when the Millwall game came around where it really clicked in.
The middle of October, that was. Yeah. You know, we lost to Charlton as well. We'd lost to Nottingham Forest. And also when we played Millwall, you know, on the 70th minute, and certain fans in the Ealing Road were singing, you know, you're getting sacked in the morning, which we talked about him on the Thomas Frank podcast, which is out on besotted.com or prideofwest.london. If you check it out, brilliant podcast, we have to say, where we got him down the pub and he told us everything. So Thomas Frank was, you know, if he was at Derby or was at Leeds United or a lot of these other places, he probably would have been sacked. But Brentford said, we know the vision, we're going to carry on with it. And now you look at the football we're playing, everyone is purring about the football. Mm. It's almost like they knew we were going to get there, but it's just going to take a little bit of time. And you've got to give people props and credit for not doing the same thing that every single other team does, sacking a manager after 5 or 10 or 15 games, because you're not going to get the results. And fair play to Thomas Frank. He's got us where we're playing now. We're very proud of our team. We're playing great football, and he's got himself a nice deal. And well, good luck to him.
Absolutely, good luck to him.
I think it's also important on Thomas Frank there, it's just to like really, really consider about how much of a top bloke he is as well. Like the stuff he does with the players, you can see after the game, he gets all the players together, comes all the way around the pitch, puts an arm around Pontus Janssen, around the captain, you know, makes a huge deal out of the togetherness and the club and the familyness of Brentford.
And he really makes sure that every time, from day one, he comes over and he claps the fans. And you can see when we get a big victory, he does the old fist pump and everything like that, which we all love. Now, I love Dean Smith. He's a wicked, wicked guy, and everyone's each their own, stuff like that. But we're always trying to get Dean to get involved. Dean, give us a wave. And he didn't, because he was probably much more focused about himself, and he probably wasn't so extrovert, even though Thomas isn't necessarily an extrovert, but he understands how much this stuff means to the fans. So for us, like, you know, I think he's done a brilliant job. He's obviously very tactically very, very, very clever person. He's one of these, he's like the players that you were talking about where, you know, Brentford, everyone goes, oh, this Bumo guy, where did Brentford find them from? You know what I'm saying? Because all of a sudden you've got Bumo, who's scored 11 goals, he's got a load of assists, and no one has got any idea where he's come from. Plays for France under 21. You know, we paid 6 million or 5, 6 million euros for him. He's probably worth 12 million now already, and everyone's just scratching their heads. Where did he come from? However, Thomas Frank, you've got to ask the same question with him. Where did they get him from? How did they bring him in and get him into that place and get him playing Brentford, playing this style of football? You have to understand, it comes from having an infrastructure. You know, they've worked on, I mean, I spoke to somebody who said it's taken us 5 years to get to this stage. 5 years. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. So these clubs like Derby, who keep selling their stadium and hoping it's going to happen overnight. Trust me, mate, you know, you buy your stadium back, and just work a little bit longer to try and make it happen.
100%. A uniqueness is what he said, didn't he, Thomas Frank, about Brentford. Something special about this club. And patience, fellas. That's all it takes. A bit of patience. Patience is a virtue. And Ollie Watkins, I believe, said that, didn't he? Nearly at the start of the season. Just be patient
with me.
He, of course, got another goal in that 3-1 victory over QPR at the weekend. You were doing your usual speaking to the fans in the pub afterwards. Here is what they had to say.
Well, Bill, wasn't that first half just magic? We thought it was all done and dusted. And, we didn't really turn up that much in the second half. Made it a little bit hard work for us. They scored a goal. We weren't creating too many chances. Maybe legs getting a little bit tired. But the boys dug in, made some substitutions. And we got over the line really probably quite easily in the end. So if our West Brom leads, I'll be watching their fixtures and not looking forward to coming in at the Fortress Griffin Park.
Very enjoyable. It's nice going 3-up so early. But I think, you know, QPR had a lot of possession. They got some decent players. They tried to play football. We really outthought them, outplayed them. Really good performance from us. But, you know, going up 3-0 after half an hour was just so gorgeous.
Yeah, we're never going to come out in the second half and do the same thing again. But the first half and that spell, you know, with the first two goals just took them out of the game, really. And it was highly impressive in the first half. Could have been, you know, 3-4-5. Sorry, what's 3? Could have been 4-5-6. Rangers have got some good players. I don't think they're a good team, but they've got some very, very good individuals. And you can see why they create chances and they scored a few goals. But defensively, we're still pretty strong as well. And that was a really, really good performance.
We should have been 4-0 up, of course, at half time. That was a definite penalty on Watkins. If I were West Brom, I'd be scared.
Man, we never looked in danger. We were in control of it all the way through. The players looked tired, to be honest, so it was right that we took a breather, and I think they did take a breather. Chance to make some subs, second half, give some people a rest. But they're getting better. You can see the team bonding there. They love playing together, which is beautiful. I'm loving it. I've been coming here forever. This is the best team I've ever seen. I mean, as a team, we've got individuals. Benrahma, I don't think, was on it the first 20 minutes. I thought he was losing the ball quite a lot. But the players around him know that he can produce that magic. And that first goal, I mean, obviously, off the training ground, beautiful to watch.
I came hopeful, but I said the words today. I came hopeful, but I was never optimistic. I think Brentford have got players all over the park and don't seem to have any weak links at the moment. That's a very hard thing to say as a QPR fan. But at moments during the game, I think we worried them. I think the second goal, had we got it, would have made it very interesting. But I can't complain about the result at all. Better side won, and hats off to him. Wilburton's perfect for us, I feel. I think he's very good with the media, but he's also very good at talking to fans about what's going forward, how we see him going forward. He's very honest. I've got no problem with Wilburton. People I knock around with, I've got no particular problem with Wilburton. What we have got a problem with is keep losing to Brentford.
I shouldn't really laugh at that, but I just couldn't help myself.
When was the last time you felt this confident playing, watching us play football games in the Championship? We were talking earlier and saying, you know, trying to compare back to the Championship season under Warburn, where obviously we were flying high. But I reckon that season, we were looking behind us, but actually we're looking forwards at the moment. So this is unreal.
I'm going to really enjoy the rest of today. I'm going to enjoy that win, but it's about Huddersfield now. We have to move on, and we've proved that we can go to Huddersfield now, and we got nothing really to fear. As long as we don't go and lose 1-0, which we're capable of doing, but I think we're on a bit of a roll now. I really do think that Brentford are the real deal, and we have to tuck in, and we will. Go on, you beat.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Peter, with the boys from Besotted, Billy the B Grant and Edward the Headwood. Now, chaps, we are going to reflect on that brilliant win against QPR at the weekend. It's now 1-7 in the Championship, 8 in all competitions, 11 win in 16, 3 wins from 3 in all competitions at the start of this season, or the start of this year, I should say, 6 straight league wins at Griffin Park. We're going to get on to BMW.
You forgot one.
Go on.
5 straight wins against QPR.
Ah, of course. There we go. How dare I slap? I'm slapping my wrist.
The Beadle, listen. Beadle's not about at the moment, is he?
He's not. But I was going to say that we're going to get onto BMW. But Billy, it's not all about them. It's also about JND.
Ah, oh, mate, the JND is on fire at the moment. The Jensen, Norgaard, the Silva combination in midfield. People didn't see that coming, did they? Norgaard, when he joined the club, I was really excited about him coming just because we needed this defensive midfielder. We needed this enforcer in the side. And I remember seeing him make his debut against AFC Wimbledon, which I thought was actually not too bad. And then he started to play a few league matches. And again, as they do, he wouldn't say struggled, but you could see that he needed to understand what our league was a little bit about. He didn't necessarily make the impact that we thought he was going to make in the first few games. And again, you know, as Brentford fans, we all panic. Oh no, there's Norgaard, you know, what's going on here? But as time's gone on, he's been training with the club. They've been learning the patterns of play, as they say. He's just been understanding what our league's all about. And he's just become from strength to strength. And he was like, you know, arguably, possibly, you know, possibly man of the match as well. I mean, I know Ollie Watkins got man of the match because he scored the goals. And I'm not sure if it's the sponsors that actually give him man of the match. And it's probably going to be some famous car brand because of the B and the M and the W in there. I'm not sure if it's them that got involved, but other car brands are readily available.
Of course, they say, are.
Like,
yes,
the Skoda and that. But I'm not sure whether or not. But to me, Norgaard was brilliant. He was brilliant. Flying in with the tackles. I was talking to my daughter about him yesterday. She goes, he's one of my favourite players because he makes these side tackles. She says he just sort of tackles from the side and he sort of seems to get the ball. Great player. Jensen as well. He was a player that a lot of people weren't sure about because they thought he's a little bit lightweight. He was a little bit too flash. You know, he liked his little tricks and all that kind of stuff, but they weren't sure whether or not he'd be there when the going gets tough. But I think, again, he's learned how to be a bit stronger, how to play the game, so he's really great. And De Silva, he's become one of my favourite players, if not, he's getting too close to my favourite player because I love the strength of the guy. I love the fact that, you know, he seems to stand up there a lot of time and people try to get the ball off his feet and they can't get the fall off his feet. And then when he decides to unleash a shot from the edge of the area, you know, bang, the goalkeeper, he needs to be on the money or else that ball is in the back of the net.
It is. Josh De Silva had an incredible game. For me personally, I thought Norgaard was exceptional. There was one highlight that vividly sticks out was in front of the Ealing Road Terrace. He slid in to a tight slide tackle, took out two QPR players at once, and they both fell on their backsides, got up, and we took the ball off. And there was a one-on-one with Eze in the centre mid, and he
who?
With Eze, is his name Eze or
did he play?
I can't remember. Did he turn up at half 12? Or
I'm not sure. It might have been in one of the defenders' pockets, was it not?
Oh, that's what we were singing, wasn't it? Eze.
Very good, gents. Very good.
It's not rehearsed either.
No, it's not. That's straight off the block. There was a one-on-one tackle right in the middle, and he slid into whatever his name is from Shepherd's Bush, and took the ball off him. He just had an amazing performance. And Jensen, one of my favourite Brentford players of all time, was Brian Woods. I loved him. He just controlled the game the way he played. And Jensen, who I think has almost been brought in as a little bit of a new Ryan Woods, and he's starting to get that kind of match rhythm and the tempo, and he's taking the ball one side of the box, he's taking the ball that side, he's putting little balls in inside. He's starting to play beautifully. He's the magic wand, if you like. Just De Silva's your strength, Norgaard's your enforcer. And it's just a great little combination in the middle. Really like it.
Bit of a set-piece king as well, especially for that first goal. Lovely move there. Benrahma, by the way, I don't think that he could have found a smaller gap to get that through the bank of players that were in the box.
No, tell you something, you are so right as well, because at the time we saw the goal, great, because we were behind the goal. But then when I watched it back on the TV, it was actually, and also we looked, and a lot of people don't like this, but you know, the XGs gives an indication as to how, what the chances are, the probability of scoring a goal. And when I saw the Benrahma goal, the XG for that was like something ridiculous, like 8% or something, really small. And I thought, I mean, he was in there, he just banged at the back of the net. Then I saw that it came across, he just sort of whacked it into a little hole. There was about 5 players in front of him, and he managed to sort of kind of avoid them all and still put it in the back of the net. So it actually wasn't an easy goal to get at all. But
I was trying to watch it back, the replay of it, to see if there was a trigger from when one of the players, there was a dummy over the ball and then the ball came in from Jensen. I was trying to see if there was a trigger for the timing that Benrahma left his spot to make the move. It wasn't. It just naturally kind of made the right move at the right time. And it was the ball had to be on that spot. Mm. If it was an inch further or later, it wouldn't have gone in.
And you've got to give the props as well, because we've got a new free kick coach, who's Andreas Georgsson as well. He came in from Malmo. And the irony is that he actually came in on the day that we had the Thomas Frank interview. I talked about that a bit earlier on PrideOfWest.London. Check it out. It's wicked. But we said to him, Thomas, I'm not being funny, mate, but our free kicks are rubbish at the moment now. And he laughed. He goes, well, we haven't got a free kick coach, you know. So I thought you had. He goes, no, he left. I think he went to Man City. He said, well, he was rubbish anyway. You know, so what's going on? He goes, well, have a free kick coach. We've got a new one starting. He said, oh, when has he started? He goes, well, he started today or started tomorrow. He said, is he any good? He goes, I've got no idea. I'll find out tomorrow when I go in the training pit. So he obviously is very good because, you know, two free kicks or two set pieces from this one, which really rattled Mark Warburton as well, if you saw in the post-match interview. And what's interesting as well, and we're not going to dwell on it too much, but the irony of this whole thing is that obviously Mark Warburton was manager of Brentford. And the reason, part of the reasons why he left is that he just didn't really want to work together with our owner to basically do the things that we're doing now, as into what Dean Smith has done, what Thomas Frank has done. One of the things that he wasn't happy about is having a free kick coach. We were terrible at set pieces when he was there. Absolutely terrible. We just rubbish. So the owner sort of wanted to get a set piece coach in, and he sent it down, and apparently set piece coach turned up and he was set packing. You know, he said, I'm not having any of it. So he wasn't happy with set piece coach. Set piece coach went away. He came back and he worked for us after Warburton left. But the irony is that he comes to Brentford and he's been done by a set piece coach. So I think he's probably thinking, maybe I shouldn't have actually sent him away.
It just goes to show, doesn't it? I don't understand why more clubs, and look, maybe they do, but I think every manager should work specifically on set pieces, because we've seen at the weekend here it's borne fruit. And actually, the Mbeumo goal as well. While we were on Mbeumo, by the way, it's the first time I've returned to the show, right?
Yes.
Now, I've noticed with Mbeumo or Buemo or Burmo or Bumo. So what are we going with, gents?
Bumo.
So it's Bumo.
Mbeumo.
Right.
Mbeumo.
Because commentator at the weekend as well, it was like Burmo. No. So right, Bumo is what we're sticking with. That's what we're going
Mbeumo
with. Bumo. Right, okay, lovely. His goal as well, by
beautiful
the way.
And also Marc Condes the week before in the FA Cup game.
Set piece as well. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you mentioned Thomas Frank there, Billy, of course. He was speaking as well after the game. Here's what he had to say.
Thomas, you spoke in the build-up to this game about creating magical moments at Griffin Park. That 45 minutes of the first half was 45 minutes of magical moments.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think it was bang up there, and I think after the 2-0 goal, you could just see that we would keep going forward, keep pressing forward, and it could have been 3-4 in that moment in time. First half was really good. Top intensity in the pressure, pressing a lot forward on the front foot. You can see the 2-0 goal was a clear way of how we want to press, win it, play behind them, goal. Third goal, same, win it, clear it, foul, free kick, well drilled, set piece, goal. In general, the first half was extremely good. Second half, a little bit disappointed, but I need to pay a lot of respect to QPR because they're a very good side.
You touched on it there, but two further set piece goals as well.
Yeah, fantastic, well drilled, set piece goals. Big respect to. And praise to Andreas, our set piece coach, and the players, especially the first one, because of course it's well drilled, but it's actually not one that we particularly set up for today, but it's one we know we set up when we have different opportunities. So that was a good one.
And you know, taking the headlines again, but again, all three of the front three score.
Yeah, BMW. I think it's the tuned version now, so we are going. I don't know the you're going from a nice, okay car to a little bit more luxury model. But the good news is that it can actually be an even better version.
Well, that was Thomas Frank. Now, I think he's taking a leaf out of your book, Billy. He's doing some car analogies.
well, I think he started the car analogies, to be fair. But he knows, listen, he knows we're firing on all cylinders. we're definitely down the motorway. But listen, he's happy. He knows he knows where we're going. You know, Thomas knows where we're going. I think what's really interesting about these, I mean, he talks about these things now and he talks about how we're doing, but what is more interesting is what they don't say sometimes, okay? Mm. And if you start to talk to him about, automatic promotion, he's not going there. and any of the players, which I think is really, really interesting. I think it's actually really good. And it shows almost like a little bit of a difference to where we were 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, because when we came into the league from Division 1, we were so excited. We were like, basically, we were happy just to be not relegated. And all of a sudden, bang, we find ourselves like in fifth place in the league and the playoffs. So it's just so exciting, scoring goals. Okay, we're letting in goals. It didn't really matter. We were so excited. Everything's going to happen. So you could imagine the feelings that's coming out as a Brentford fan then. Now, we've been through that. We've been through a couple of bad seasons and sacked a manager or so, seen the development of sides. And then all of a sudden, we've seen our side morph into a side which is actually really good. It is much better than the side when we got to the playoffs. And all of a sudden, even as a fan, I'm thinking we are actually much better than that side. And that time, I thought we were world beaters, but we actually really are world beaters now. Now, because we are world beaters, I'm not being funny, but I ain't taking any risks. I'm just going to just hold it down, take it as it is, and enjoy the moment. Because it's easy, because we're almost like mature Championship fans now. 6 years ago, we go, yeah, look at us, we're the best, look at us. But now it's just like, no. It could still go horribly wrong. We're a brilliant side. So, and I think Thomas Frank and them lot are doing exactly the same thing, just managing the expectations. They're saying, all right, yeah, but you can catch up Leeds. The next game is Huddersfield. We need to beat them. You know what I'm saying? It's just keeping the focus on the next games and keeping it down. And I actually really like that because, it'll just keep us going and ticking along till the end of the season.
It's the archetypal taking each day as it comes, isn't it?
Absolutely. Everybody you keep meeting into and everyone goes, God, Brentford are doing well, aren't they, Ed? You go, yeah, they're doing right. Yeah, where are you, third? Yeah, okay. So do you think you're going to catch Leeds? You're going to get up there? Let's just play the next game. I'll tell you the truth. I only found out today, I was stressing a bit, that hypothetically, if we were to reach the playoff final, hypothetically, mm-hmm. I thought I was at a wedding on that day.
Oh, crikey.
And so I've been stressing about it and thinking if I could manage going to the game and then getting to the after and sacking off the ceremony. I found out today, fine, you can still go. It's a different day. And I'm thinking, well, are we in a position to go up automatically or am I still overthinking it? Even if we do get to the playoffs, we've still got two games to get to the final. So it's just take it as it comes, slow it down, just win against Huddersfield, win against the next game.
It's funny you talk about dilemmas, and I know we're going to go to a break in a minute, but I have to mention that when you talk about Red. As a football fan, you have to think about these things. And if we were in the position we're in now, last year, I would have been in all sorts of trouble because my sister-in-law announced that she was getting married, and it was over the weekend, the playoff final weekend. And my face, when she says I'm getting married, and I was just like, that's great, you know what I'm saying? And I was absolutely, I didn't know what to do. And she said, it's in Serbia as well. So she's got, and I was just thinking,
there's no chance.
So I was working out I can get back, and it was on the Sunday, I think it was. So I thought, maybe I'll be able to kind of Saturday and fly back. So in the end, what I did is I actually booked flights. So I went to Serbia, so I was going to fly out there, and then I booked a flight back from Serbia just in case we got to the playoffs. And then I booked another flight back to London afterwards just in case we got to the playoffs. I bought that in January just in case we got to the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? Because, and these are the things that you've got done. Now, I would have definitely have done it, but obviously I haven't told my missus, I haven't told my sister-in-law, I haven't told anyone. They don't know that I'd actually booked some flights just in case. So in the end, the irony is I'm sort of like, I was kind of sort of relieved the fact that we never got to the playoffs in a way even I wanted to. And so I end up sort of watching Fulham versus Aston Villa in a pub in Serbia thinking, it could have been me sort of trying to get to the airport to get to this game and then get back for the wedding sort of kind of tomorrow. It was a bit of a bizarre experience.
I did look at cabs from Wembley to the church and see if it was possible. Right? I was like, we'll be out by 5:30 and then when the dinner will be, maybe I could do it on time. And I found out the wedding's now on the Friday. Rachel was on Friday, and then Monday is the playoff final day. So I've got the time to turn it around.
Yes. We're all good. The things we do as football fans, gents.
That's right.
Wouldn't change it for the world, would
nope.
you?
No.
We are changing stadiums, though, of course, next season. A bit of stadium chat next on the Brentford Fan Show.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Brentford Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Peedle, with Billy the B. Grant.
Hello.
And Edward the Headwood.
All right.
Love it. Edward the Headwood. It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's got a massive head.
It's like trophy bitter.
I look like a thumb.
You probably, old school people remember, whipped bread, big head. Trophy bitter, the pint that thinks it's a quart.
There you go. Yeah. I think you're a couple of years before my time there,
that
Bill.
Is actually, yeah. We're going to talk about the
other
move.
Other beers are available as well.
I was
going
to say, mate, yeah, thank you. Thank you for dropping that one in. The move to Lionel Road, chaps. Ticket sales, they've commenced.
They have season ticket sales, and I have, and my chums, my buddies, who hopefully are listening in here, we've all got our season tickets, or not all of us, actually. Some, a few of us have got our season tickets for the new Brentford Stadium. We were there for the first day of buying season tickets at the West End. So what they did is that, you know, there were obviously four stands at the new Griffin Park or Lionel Road or Brentford Community Stadium, whichever you want to call it. North End, you know, South End, East End and West End. And the West End is meant to be the equivalent of the Ealing Road, which is the terrace that we're in at the moment now. So the first day of sale for the West End was last Friday. Before that, there were people who were in the sides who could buy it sort of on the Monday and the Tuesday. And on the Monday, you know, some people were buying their tickets for the ground, and then the players turned up, which is all really nice. It's a bit of media for them, you know, players turned up and just greeted them, so they're very happy with that. Unfortunately, there's no players that turned up for the West End because we're just the Renegades, you know what I'm saying? No, actually, that's not true. The reason why there's no players is because we were playing QPR the following day and they had to be focused on beating Mark Warburton's team. So we got on with it. And tell you something, the experience, it was really, and I'm just telling you, they're fantastic down there. They're really friendly, really helpful, really nice. It's a really personable service. You go in there, it's a small little hut, just down from Kew Bridge, just down from literally from where the stadium is. You go inside there, they'll help you. You watch a video, which gives you a 3D, a mock-up, computer mock-up of what you'd be like sitting in your seats at the stadium, what it's going to be like, just on a video. Oh. So yeah, it's quite cool. Then obviously you can put VR glasses on, and then you can get an idea of what you're like sort of sitting in a seat and seeing the stadium and looking around you and stuff like that as well. So, you know, you've got this whole experience there just to go down so that you can feel comfortable, because obviously we can't go into the stadium as yet because the stadium's been locked up there. They're building there and they're not letting anybody else in. The stadium's going to be finished, I think, probably the middle to the end of February. So we've only got a month to go. So they're like, listen, let them crack on. Let us sell the season tickets, and then when it's finished, people can go over there and probably have a look at some stage. So they've tried to make it so that you understand as much as possible what it's all about. And, you know, to be fair, I'm going to be gutted. We're all going to be gutted leaving Griffin Park. It's a wicked stadium, and people love that place, and I love that place. But I have to admit, I've got a little bit excited going down there just sort of checking it out, because you know it's going to happen. And you're sort of thinking, okay, so you go there, but all of a sudden when you see it and you see the stadium, you see the tickets and people, you sort of think, oh, I'll tell you something, this is actually real. And
with regards to the whole experience and the VR and just putting your headset on,
yeah.
So are they planning to do this? Because we're looking at potentially 10,000 season ticket sales, right? Are we looking at 10,000 people all doing this particular experience?
I reckon yes, because it looks like they've got, appointments. I mean, okay, I've got my appointment, which was the 10th or 11th or whatever it may be of January. I've got the Edward here. Who's your appointment? When's your appointment?
So the person I've left in charge of this is Robin. So we go with each other all the time, and there's a group of three of us. So Robin is the one that's good at organising stuff. So he's taken control. He's been in touch. He's put all of our fan numbers in. He's contacted the club, they've given us a block. They said, right, come in between these dates. I think it's March the 7th or something or other. So we're going to go and get all of our seats together then. I've got a couple of questions for Bill, because you've been there and the experience of doing that, in terms of worries that I know that I've had or other people have had in terms of what happens if I buy my ticket now, but my mate wants to buy a ticket down the line. How can we sit together? Is there a way around that?
Well, yeah, there is. What we've done is that we've got a small sort of group of us where what you do is that they enable you, if you're a season ticket, if you've got, you know, I say a priority, but say for example, because of the amount of years I've had a season ticket and also the amount of games I've been to up and down the country, I've got like a ridiculous amount of tap points. So I've gone in early. So I'm allowed to bring in two extra people with me who might be a sort of slower priority order. So what I've got immediately, I've got my daughter in there. I've got my daughter's friend who come to football with me because they haven't, you know, got as many tap points as what I have. So immediately they come in with me. And lots of other people have done exactly the same thing where, you know, they go to football by themselves. They stand on the Ealing Road. But then afterwards they've got a couple of spaces to bring other people in with them. So what we found is with our group had expanded because you've got yourself,
coming along with people who are able to bring mates of ours that theirs who they probably stand on the Ealing Road with, but they may not have been able to afford to buy the season tickets for as long, or they may not be able to afford to, you know, they might have worked during the weekend, so they can't afford to go to away games. So that enables you to stand with your friends. So, I mean, you at the moment, I suppose your priority is in March. So you, in principle, you know, as you and Robin will be able to bring two extra people along with you each,
yep,
who can actually come in at the same time as well.
Yeah.
You know, so that, yeah.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's it. And it's just, everybody's a bit concerned about wanting to be able to just be with their pals. Or if, for example, one of your friends comes who doesn't have a season ticket, will there be an option about, you know, they can come to a game and get the seat next to you? Is that a possibility?
I mean, this is, again, I don't work for the ticket office. I mean, we asked all these questions as well. But, you know, what they're saying is obviously the scenario is that you're going to, you know, as many people, they're hoping to try and get 10,000 people in season tickets. You know, at the moment now we've got, I don't know, 6,000 people season tickets. So that's going up by, you know, nearly 50% of people, nearly 100% of people, actually, you know, nearly going to be season ticket holders in the new stadium. So if you think about that, at the moment now, Ealing Road, I'm not sure how many it's two and a bit thousand people in Ealing Road. I think the West Stand is probably 3,000+. So all of a sudden you've got a bit of extra capacity there. So whether or not that end's going to be full of season ticket holders, or whether or not it's going to have gaps in it which will allow people to go there, I don't know. But I think what they're thinking is maybe if there's the same sort of thing as the ticket exchange where people buy their season tickets but they can't go, and all of a sudden they offer it to Brentford so that people can actually come in and buy tickets to in that space, using, you know, season ticket holders who can't make it, you put it back into the club who actually resell those tickets to allow people to come in. But I can't really answer that because I'm not from the club myself. I think that's going to be the idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a few other questions, but...
No, I was just going to say that one of the words you've used a few times, Billy, when describing all of this is standing. Now, that's a problem that you don't have with regards to bringing your friends on because you just tuck them in and they stand next to you. The situation with standing, guys, this is something that every modern football fan every old school football fan, I suppose, will discuss because we like to stand at football. Invariably, we still do stand at football, even if it's an all-seater stadium. What's the feeling amongst fans about this? Because for those who maybe don't know, the situation, is it all-seater? Will there be any standing?
Okay, the stadium is an all-seater stadium because it has to be an all-seater stadium due by law. Obviously, we put in for standing, safe standing, whatever you want to call it, if the law does change. And we really lobbied for it. I mean, myself as Besotted, we all lobbied for it. We had Bias, they lobbied for it. A lot of fans have lobbied for it. You know, we had our previous CEO, he went down there. We had meetings with the FSF, which I was on the board of as well. I think we got MPs involved. It's a big thing for us, but we thought the law might have changed. But unfortunately, there were a few political things which became a little bit more important. So the standing thing has been put to the back, but doesn't worry, because the fact that they have to remember, and the club know this, and everyone knows this, and the club are not only aware, but they've embraced it. They realise the fact that people do stand at football matches. And also the fact is that, you know, I've stood in the Ealing Road for 35 odd years, and my football experience is a standing experience, as is all my friends that go to football, right? That's what we do. We stand at a football match. I go to an away game and I stand at a football match. I don't sit, you know. The younger generation, like if you meet, and I'm not trying to generalise here, but you meet a lot of Fulham fans a lot of them have come in when Fulham got into the Premier League, so all they understand is about sitting. So when they come to Brentford, they all moan about our stadium, go, oh, I hate that stadium, you know what I'm saying, because they don't understand the standing part of it, you know what I'm saying. It's like the seat isn't comfy enough for them, so they start moaning. So okay, but you can't disregard other people's experience. That is their experience, so that's just kind of different. So, you know, and fair play to them, tip your hat to them. But coming back to us, we stand, we love to stand. We have got at least 2,000 people at Brentford now who stand, and I think those people are expecting to go to the new stadium and they're expecting to stand. So what the club has done is the club has told, and they've said, listen, this is an all-seater stadium, doing the legal thing and telling people it's right, but also saying that if you wanted a certain experience, then you go into the West Stand, which basically, I will translate it for them. They have said this is an all-seater stadium, but I will translate it to say, basically they're saying, if you want to stand, go to the West End.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. And this is my translation, not the club's translation, so they can't slap me on the wrist for saying, you've misquoted me. But I'm going to just say this. We're saying is that if you want to stand, go in the West End. There's three other stands if you don't want a stand. So if you want the same view as you get in the West Stand, go in the East Stand because you'll be behind the goal. You'll have the away fans as well, so you can have a little bit of banter with them and you can actually see the same view. But if you want to stand, go in the West Stand. It could be the upper tier, there could be the lower tier. And we're between us at Besotted and Bias and the West Stand Alliance and everybody else, we're trying to make that very, very clear. It's not a case of, oh, I quite like it. It's a bit lively there, but I think I'm going to sit down the bottom and just keep myself chilled. It's like, no. You're going to have people standing around you. And if you don't, then maybe this year, then next year when it gets even more livelier, when more people start coming in, it's going to happen. So what we don't want is we don't want people coming in there saying, I was told the back is standing and the front is sitting. And all of a sudden I'm sitting here and they've got people standing all around me. That's not the score. The score is just assume the West Stand is going to be lively and standing, just like it is in the South Stand. I think it is at Wolverhampton Wanderers. If you go to the South Stand at Leeds United as well, literally. I mean, I was in there for the playoff semi-final against Derby. No one sat down. No one.
Simple as that. There you go. Happy with that one?
Yeah, easy. I'll be standing.
Job done. We're going to be talking transfers next.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
It's the Brentford Fans Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with the boys from Besotted, Billy the B Grant and Edward the Headwood. Right, gents, the transfer window is open. It is upon us. We are deep into it. And we are just going to mull over some potential targets right now, those who we should potentially keep at the club. So we've got three questions for you. Who must we keep? I want one player. Where must we buy? I want one position. And who should we add? And a player. So, fellas, take your pick.
I'll kick off with who would keep. I know it says one, but I'm going to do one obvious one. You know, we've got to keep Watkins. Hypothetically, there's your goals. If we don't have Watkins, we don't have the goals. We don't have 18 goals this season, so we're not in the position we are. He's very important. If we can keep him, if we could put a brick wall around him and say no one can else have him, that's fine, we'll keep Watkins. But in a more understated position, which is probably more important, is someone like Henrik Dalsgaard. So he's one of the older members of the team. He's a leader. He's not the captain, but he is a captain within the league after them. He keeps an eye on the younger players. He tackles hard. He plays like he wants to win the game. You can see his frustration when he makes a mistake or if there's been. I just think he's a very, very important member of the team at the moment.
Billy?
I mean, obviously, Ollie Watkins is unbelievably important to Brentford because if you think about it, is if he's gone. You know, okay, we've got goals coming from all over the park as well. But, you know, to have scored, 18 goals in just over half a season, we were delighted that Andre Gray scored 18 goals in the whole of the season at the time. And that's the season that we got to the playoffs. And we were thinking, we're made here. Then this guy's the best ever, you know. But, you know, he's been superseded and some. So, for me, of course he is, you know. He's an absolutely key player. But I also, you know, coming back to it, says that's too obvious. Bumo, my man the Bumo, he came to the club and he's taken a little bit of time, not that much time, about a month or so, to get used to how Brentford play. He is brilliant because he is strong, he's fast, he's tricky, he knows where the back of the net is, he's so skillful, but also the assists as well. And that's so important to have somebody who assists as well as score goals. And the players just don't know what to do with him. So I'm going to talk about my man, Brian from Troyes, as we used to call him as well. Like I'm saying.
I don't think he's got to his best yet either. No. I think he's got a lot more to give.
7-9 as well in terms of goal scoring. Yeah. I mean, if he carries on like that until the end of the season,
yes,
it's impressive, isn't it?
Indeed, it is. Yeah.
Okay, in terms of where the club should add, now we're looking at positions here, not a specific player, or perhaps you want to combine the two.
Yeah, well, definitely combine the two. Do you want to go there?
Yeah, I think this has been a problem for us for quite a while. I think it'd be nice to have another left back. For me, I think left back's always been a little bit of a sticky one. We always relied on, for example, Jake Bidwell never got injured when he was with us. And then we've had Barbe last year playing, who's a centre back playing left back. Now Rico Henry's got his fitness and he's not getting as injured as he was. That's fine. But behind then we are looking at bringing those B team players up to fill quite an important position if you're playing those attacking wings like we do. So I think left back we should strengthen in.
Which is interesting as well because, I mean, obviously Thompson's been playing left back there as well, and I think the club quite, you know, quite rate him. They say that he's probably been quite unlucky the fact that we're actually just like, Rico's such a brilliant player,
yep,
and actually we're doing so well. You know, if it was any other side, if we were a mid-table side, and we didn't have Rico, he probably would have been in there week in and week out, you know. But, I mean, that is a point, because I thought about that. I labelled a little left-back scenario as well, but I'm going to flip it back to the old chestnut. If I was to get one position, I'm actually going to say striker, because I'm thinking midfield, like we're doing all right, you know. Defence wise, I think we're really solid, and of course we need the backup, but I think we can deal with that. But I was thinking striker wise, it'd be really interesting to be able to bring somebody off the bench. At the moment now, we're thinking that if Ollie Watkins decides that we want to flip it up, you put him over in the wing, then, you know, maybe you might bring Bumo back and put him into the centre, you know what I'm saying? Or you bring Divasoglu, who's seemingly a great player, but is he a striker, or is he sort of a number 10 type player? Even same thing as Marcondes as well. Is he straight up striker, or is he a sort of a slightly, you know, playing off the striker type person, you know, number 10? So I'm thinking if we decided that we're going to get a straight up striker, but who's happy to sit on the bench... and I was just having a look around again. I'd have to do a little bit more research because I'm not a scout as such, but I was just thinking somebody like, you know, and who's slightly different to Ollie Watkins, someone like, I'm thinking for Peterborough.
What's he going to say? Go on.
Ivan Toney, I'm just wondering. Yeah, you know, I'm just wondering, but the fact is that the reason why is he's very strong at finishing, you know what I'm saying? He puts the ball in the back of it, but he's really good in the air, you know what I'm saying? You know, great at passing, a great header, you know, and defensively as well, tracking back, he's really good. So getting a player like that, if we decided that we were struggling against, you know, Charlton or one of these big strong teams are blocking it up against us, we had to, you know, change our style a little bit, knock the ball up there, you know, knock it up to Ivan Toney, you know, with, you know, Ollie out in the wing, you know, just to change our style up. I'm just thinking maybe that might be a nice little option.
It's not the worst shout in the world, of course. Toney, Issa as well, Madison, all of those three at Peterborough. Funnily enough, they've actually drawn a few blanks of late. So I'm not going to say that transfer value would have come down.
Well, Madison's not at Peterborough anymore, is he?
Today he moved on, right?
He moved to Charlton, mate.
There you
he's
go.
He's gone, you know, he's gone. So, you know, you've got a bit of money in the bank, you know. Well, 2.2 million apparently. But they want
a bit more than that for Toney, I reckon.
I think they will do.
We are asking this question of, like, who would you buy? Who would be the person you bring in? But we all know the person we're going to bring in, if we do, is someone that we've never heard of, who's just going to turn out to be the better than the player that we've gone in to fill.
That's true.
Just to finish on this, gents, I've got a question for you, because I was talking to a Brentford fan mate of mine, earlier this week, a Brentford chum, yes, and he was discussing the whole loan market. Now, when you look at the Championship in particular, Jack Harrison coming into Leeds from City has been very good. Patrick Roberts has made an instant impact at Middlesbrough since coming in as well. I know that Brentford very much have a way of operating. We spoke about it earlier on in the show. But are you sometimes biting your nose off to spite your face with the fact of not going down this route?
Not necessarily, because I think we'll bring in a loan player if the loan player's right. I mean, I know that we looked at Nketiah. But the money that they wanted for him was ridiculous compared to what we might get out of it. So, I mean, I don't know if the loan fee was 2 or 3 million or whatever it might have been, as well as the wages and everything like that, plus the assurances that he had to play as well. And we didn't think it was right for us. We definitely, you know, we definitely looked at him, and, you know, he's not, you know, he's not coming to us this window, 100%. We used to do the loan thing, you know, Harley Dean, you know, Forshaw, all these players, we got them from loaning them, and then we signed them eventually.
Try before you buy.
Yeah, try before you buy. But we were one step down at the time. So when we tried them and then we liked them, we were able to buy them. But now what happens is that you loan these players like Pritchard, great, and all of a sudden we blow them up, and then we try and buy them, and they're like, ah, actually, no, you've blown me up now. So that's the difficulty. However, we're in a slightly different situation now, and the feeling is if a loan player comes along who can get us over the line, doesn't really matter if we can't buy him or not, but if we pick him up for 3 or 4 months and that person can get us over the line, then we'll pick them up. But that player has to be better than what we've got already, has to understand the football that we're playing already, has to, you know what I'm saying? It's like, why are we going to get a right back who's going to usurp Ruslev, who Ruslev is potentially a very good player.
He's a decent
player, you know, at right back. So you're going to get a lone player who probably doesn't quite know the ropes, or he's still developing. He's a youth team player who potentially might take 3 or 4 or 6 months or a year to get, you know, to get happening. So yes, if the player is right, we'll definitely loan them, but they've got to be literally top 4 standard in the Championship.
Okay, fellas, it has been nothing but a pleasure being back on the Brentford Fan Show with you both. Thoroughly enjoyed the past hour. It's flown by.
It has. It's
absolutely flown by. Right. Huddersfield up next, of course, some crackers in the past in recent history. There's been a 4-4, a 3-2, 5-1 in May 2016. You've got that plus. You want to mention a little event at the end of the season?
That's right. We have got, as people know, we've got our end of season knees up. We've got the end of season social. It's going to be an Ealing. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. We've got two names already sorted. We're going to get another couple of names. I'll be looking that sort of bit of music, bit of cabaret and all that kind of stuff. But listen, just wait. I keep saying this, prideofwest.london and besotted.com. Just check it out. We're going to get the tickets on sale quite soon. It's the day before the final game at Griffin Park, which is going to be at midday, so 12:30. So people are going to be like probably taking the day off on the Friday, going out all night, you know what I'm saying, and going straight to Griffin Park. So that's going to be a brilliant event. So make sure you're going to be there.
Lovely stuff. This has been the Brentford Fan Show. Gents, we'll be back next week, next Monday at 8 p.m. See you then.
You be.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.